Peter Newell, welcome to the Tango Capital.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Peter, you are a tango dancer of many years standing. You dance all around southern Queensland, northern New South Wales, as well as in other places in Australia. You DJ tango music. You have developed over the years a model for thinking about the tango conversation. Now, tango is a social dance. It famously takes two to tango. And the key social activity that we have is conversation. It's how we connect with each other, learn about each other, feel about each other. But tango is a physical activity rather than a verbal one. So what is a tango conversation?
For my mind, the tango conversation is a dialogue, and it is a physical, but I think it's more than just physical. And it's a conversation which we take the music in, and I'm talking about the follower's role is just as active as the lead's role in interpreting the music. We give it to each other, and then we dance. And the movements are most likely, happily, coming together in a state of bliss if it works well. And if it's just not working so well, there's places where you can improve, perhaps, working on your connection and other things. The dialogue is spontaneous. It moves with the music. You dance with the music and both follower and lead are in that dialogue.
Okay, so if you go to a tango dance, though, a milonga, a dance hall, it might be full of strangers. So how do you go about striking up a tango conversation when you don't know anyone?
When you use the cabeceira, which is a form of eye communication, you will look into the distance and you'll see somebody that you would like to dance with. The eye connection, at that point, you'll start to synchronize when you see that person, and that person that you're looking at will synchronize with you. If it's a good connection at that point where you're looking at them, a nod might happen, or something inside will say, oh yeah, this is right. So for a lead, you'll approach and go to the dance floor. You'll start synchronizing on the dance floor, but the conversation starts really when you first walk into the milonga. And the way you show up in the milonga is actually very important. I think if you bring all the baggage in from the day-to-day, if you look down or you don't feel so good, it will send off a vibe to the other people in the dance floor. And so it's very important to perhaps become a social animal. What I mean by that is you actually engage people's eyes just as you're walking in, shake their hands and make sure that people are comfortable with you and you're with them. It's a process that you develop as a tango dancer. It maybe when we come to tango, we don't have that social skill, but it takes a long time and you get more relaxed. And after a while, the rejections that may occur, people don't want to dance with you and that's going to happen, they become less of a problem and you acknowledge that's what they want to do, and what you want to do is move on to someone who wants to dance with you. And the best dancers are those who really want to dance with you.
Now, research has shown that strong social relationships in day-to-day life are a key predictor of health and lifespan. Does this apply to tango relationships as well?
Oh, very much so. There's huge amounts of data out there about the social brain and how that can affect your health. People who are socially isolated have poor health outcomes, can be attributed to social isolation. On the other side of that, a good social brain that you can develop, you're going to have a better happiness, and you're going to have friends that you can do things with. If you don't have a social brain developed, it can be developed by dipping out and saying, well, okay, I do have a few problems, but they can be worked on. And the good thing about it is that most people will, after a while, be transformed by the environment. We all kind of know that it's going to be the thing that why we do it, not only because we like it, but we go away with our minds filled with lovely endorphins and dopamine and all those feel-good hormones being around in our brains. At the end of the milonga, we're very, very happy, and the people around you, it gets infected. Everybody is happy at the same time, and it's just a wonderful, delightful thing that you can do for yourself and for others and the community.
So you're talking there about two effects coming out of the tango connection, one of which is for quite short term. It's around by the end of a night of dancing. The individual will feel better, and there's sound reasons, sound physical reasons for that to occur. But you're also talking about over a longer time period, perhaps as short as months, some significant social outcomes in terms of a person's personal presentation of themselves, perhaps their self-esteem, perhaps their physical condition, because of the fact that they're doing a physical activity like tango.
Yes, it develops really, you know, perhaps in the classes, and then when they actually get the courage up to go to a milonga, which is quite scary for new people, they will discover that the clothes that they wear are important for not only to feel comfortable in, but to be able to move in. And you know, you have to look after a lot of things. Personal, there is a transformation in lots of ways, and people become more open, but they don't need to tell you what's going on. This is the interesting thing I've found with dancing with my friends and people that have danced before, is that I can tell if they're afraid, I can tell if they're maybe got a sore leg, or physically and mentally you tune into them. They don't really have to tell you what is actually going on, and through the dance, empathize with them.
So how then does a tango conversation between the two partners in the dance occur? And can we learn to do it, or do we have to be good at it? Do we have to have some innate skills? How does a tango conversation occur on the dance floor?
Well, it starts by synchronizing our bodies and our minds together. It starts by, and then once you're starting to synchronize your minds and your emotions start to synchronize, then you synchronize with the music. There is times where the follower is doing something that the lead is leading, and there's a pause. Then the follower may continue on and the lead stops. So in fact, the lead and the follow sort of are interchangeable as it gets maybe a little bit further into the tango. The conversation could be emotional as well. And I've had this experience with a few of my friends who, you know, may have been sick or had some tragedy happen to them. And I can feel the emotion coming from them in a deep sense. That feeling is dialogue. When we think of the tango conversation, it's not like words or in sentences in the same way. It's using emotions and feelings that go back and forth. So the feeling of happiness, the feeling of sadness, the feeling of passionate about something, the feeling of excitement, those emotions are transmitted back and forth.
And that transmission is through different body movements?
Body movements, but we also perceive each other, not just by movement. We perceive each other in lots of ways, just by looking. But so you can feel how a person feels if they're nervous, for instance. So, and then someone else that's had a really good dance just before you, we'll be able to give you that feeling of joy. So then you have that joy, and then you give it to somebody else, and it makes that feeling just go further and further. So it goes the other way, of course. If you have lots of bad dances and or somebody's been rejected really badly by a toxic community, you end up with somebody who's feeling very, very upset. There's so many things goes on in a milonga. We're in this world, micro world, I guess, between each other when we're dancing in a couple dance. And everyone else in the dance floor in their couples are in their little worlds, but we share that world with everyone on the dance floor. So even though we're in this tiny world, we're also in a bigger one as well, which is on the rondo in the dance floor. It's a dialogue, but it's not in words, but it's in motions and feelings.
And this is a very physical kind of conversation, though. People are not stopping to chat on the dance floor, for instance. It's they're embracing another person, and that's where the conversation is occurring.
Yeah. So let's say when you first start to go on the dance floor, and you before you even move, one of the things that's really important to me is to be able to connect first, which is, so I'll stand there just shifting weight back and forth and listening to the first phrase of the music. But what I'm doing at that point is communicating with my partner where my weight is, finding out where her weight is where, you know, the first parts of the music, how it's going to fit in the dance. So I don't really communicate with words too much at that point. I might be saying hello, but before we actually dance, I will make sure that one or two phrases will be connecting and starting the conversation at that point. So yeah, it is physical, but there is some other things going on too, especially if you really like the person. There is something there. There is a dialogue that's going on. So if it's just somebody you're just dancing with, well, that's okay. If someone new, you have to work out what's going on with them, you know, where their body is before you actually move. So very first conversation is connect with the music, physically and on the dance floor, and the relationship where you are on the dance floor as well.
So perhaps the conversation, like all conversations, is going to start with setting the other person at ease.
That's right. The embrace has to be comfortable. If the embrace is comfortable, connection will just happen. If the embrace is uncomfortable, you're struggling. Over years and years, I've learned that it's less is more. You have to let your partner be able to be free. And a comfortable embrace is such a lovely thing. And that's what we really go for when we go to tango. We go for that comfortable embrace. The more comfortable the embrace is, perhaps the more dancers you'll get. I'm pretty sure you will. It puts the other person at ease. Oxytocin is released, and that's the trust hormone. So people at that point will trust. And so what the greatest gift for the lead can do for the follower is for her to trust him. And so the dialogue between the two can happen when there's a comfortable embrace, and that idea goes through the whole dance.
Physical contact can be quite challenging. You talked about a comfortable embrace. How do you get comfortable? What is a comfortable embrace?
Interesting, yeah. A comfortable embrace for me is when I'm using less energy than I would be if I was uncomfortable. It feels good. It feels wonderful. It's easy to communicate. If it's hard, well, it gets very rigid. It's not working. A comfortable embrace is when the other person feels, oh, wow, this feels good. You know, so that they can feel, okay, now I'm okay to go and be physically free to express myself. So that goes for the follower and for the lead.
So you talk then about an embrace that is not such hard work. So perhaps lower muscle tension then communicates to your partner and they drop their muscle tension imperceptibly perhaps, but you gradually come into a connection.
Yeah, on a physical sense, yes. If your arms are nice, light state, a feeling of no tension in your arms and your neck, other parts of your body are relatively relaxed, be able to move. It's a state between alert and relaxed. The person is feeling able to be expressive without physical constraints. It's a freedom within the embrace.
So is it always comfortable?
No. Two things here. I'm not that tall, so if they're tall, sometimes that becomes difficult for me to see where I'm going. So it can be uncomfortable because I can't see where I'm going on a busy dance floor. Not physically uncomfortable, just it's kind of cognitive. I've got to work a lot harder. So to find the right height for me, it means that I can be comfortable and seeing into the distance and making the right kind of adjustments. But when it comes to getting out of your comfort zone, well, that's how you really need to move and change the way you dance. If you're not going to push that envelope a little bit, and I don't mean uncomfortable with the person you're dancing with, I mean getting out of your comfort zone and doing something that maybe you're just taking that step that you've learned from the last class and doing that for nearly the whole of it no longer, or just have a repertoire of a few steps. Breaking out of what pattern you have and doing something that you haven't done before. And we all need to get out of our comfort zone to move into something new. And once we start doing that, whatever we've moved into, next time won't be so hard. So you're lifting the bar every time you push your comfort zone. And that might mean somebody goes to a milonga and perhaps cabasei is someone who's a better dancer than them, and they get on the dance floor and they find themselves uncomfortable, but they do it anyway. But the next time they dance with that person, it might be better. And then eventually you're comfortable.
So comfort comes from discomfort.
Yes.
And so that challenge about physical contact is simply another one of those challenges that that we have to work through.
Once, a long time ago, I hadn't experienced the close embrace, and a lovely lady just took me into close embrace, and I felt uncomfortable because I hadn't experienced it. And then I realized what it was, and it was fine. Next time was easier. That's all I want to do now. I mean, because there's so much more information you can get from close embrace than you can from open. The body is touching with the chest. There's so much more contact, physical contact, when you're in close embrace. And so your body can read more information about the other person. A follow and lead combination is, the data is much bigger. So, and when I'm in open embrace, it's different. It's more, you have to keep your eyes on the other person. You're looking at information coming in is different. That's why you can dance with your eyes closed. Not that I dance with my eyes closed in the crowd of Malonga, but a lot of my followers that are dancing with me will close their eyes. Why do they do that? It's because they're internalizing their feeling senses into a set of input that's coming from the embrace, and they trust where they're being led on the dance floor, the mind of a intuitive state. So intuitive, or in that, you know, the body starts to take over in an automatic way.
So what I'm hearing is that there's a process of socialization almost that occurs for the tango dancer, that they learn in one dance, in one malonga, and that learning is reflected in future dances or future malongas or future partnerships. But there's also the other level, which is the fact that the core unit of traditional tango is the tanda, which is around 10 minutes worth of music. Is that long enough to build a relationship with someone?
I find myself tuning into my partner with a comfortable embrace, and then tune into the music, and then tune into her musicality and what she thinks of the music. Okay, I'm not asking her, but I just feel that what's happening, shout movements or whatever, and then move off. Now, the first song in the tanda generally is one that sort of sets the scene for the rest of the tanda. And I'll take it really slowly just so I can connect and see what she can do. If she's a beginner, doesn't know all the steps that I might be able to throw at her, I won't do any of that stuff. I'll only just walk and find a place where it's a little bit less, maybe slightly a little bit uncomfortable in terms of her level, not too much, and then I'll bring back to what is comfortable. And so I won't throw anything in there that's going to make her feel uncomfortable, like, you know, double zaccatas or any of those kind of complex steps. And just stay with that until the end of the first song, and then the second one will start to build. By the time we get to the third song, we really connected, and most of the time I worked it out and try and build a sense of joy so that when we say thank you to each other at the end, that we are in a state of, we've given each other a really good time.
We're now talking about concentration.
I think concentration is an amazing part of tango because it brings things together. You know, we've got to use our cognitive mind, and when you're in a state of concentration, things are slow. I mean, we're processing things slowly. And, you know, this is a place where you do maths and you do... This is an opportunity for me to use shapes, rhythms, and timing all come into this place when I'm concentrating. When I'm thinking about my partner, I'm concentrating on what is happening with the follower rather than just concentrating on my own steps. When I'm creating a sequence, it has to be from where my follower is, not from where I am. And so shifting the concentration or the perspective into where her movements are is the place where I can create from, not from where I am.
So a conversation like the one that you were talking about earlier presumes that the other person isn't distracted but is paying attention to us. And similarly, what you're saying is that we have to pay attention to them.
But there's more to that than that. When I first started doing tango, we were taught steps, but then you try and remember the steps on the dance floor and then lead those steps with the follower. So, and the follower goes along with the steps, but after a while you realise there's something wrong here. The follower is just following along with the steps, and then, every now and again you go, oh, can you do something different? When you change the focus from your steps to her, where the follower is and what the follower is doing, the creation starts from there. The steps come from what's happening with her body and where she's moving and what's going on with the movement in that step. There is a conversation going. You have to put the concentration out of your mind. You can't really be, I'm doing this next. Because by the time you think it, the opportunity of what happens in the dance is gone. When you're concentrating on something in a conscious state, it's too slow. So you've got to commit it to another part of your brain, which is the midbrain, which is all about moving quickly in an automatic state so that we can speed up our dance. Concentration is when I can project in my mind things like shapes and dynamic according to the music. So I might see an overlay, like a double exposure, if you know what I mean, of shapes and colours as well, and varieties of movements in my mind. But I won't see them as steps, but I'll see them as shapes, three-dimensional shapes. We're developing the three-dimensional experience of our partner in space and time. So how that works is that the more you dance, the more you feel that three-dimensional shape of your partner move in space. So when you're conducting a turn, the experience of the three-dimensional space is where the center is. You build up this whole technique of knowing where your partner is in space, but don't need to know about pulling out of your brain a sequence of steps, because they're not going to work always to what is happening on the dance floor. Someone could be in your way. The music doesn't work at that point. So you've got to always change things on the fly. And when you start with concentration, then that part of the experience, perhaps when you're in a class or in a practica, has to go into the midbrain, which does the job of the automatic movements.
Now, this conversation, with its slightly automated undertones, is going on a dance floor. So there's lots of other people dancing around, as you mentioned. Which means that the couple have to be aware of that social context, and they have to be able to work in with those people, maybe make changes on the fly. As you said, you need to be able to concentrate to adjust to those kinds of emergent problems. What happens when it goes wrong?
Oh, well, this is a protocol there. When you're being into each other, another couple. When you say thank you, I'm sorry, and very politely continue. But I found in recent times a kind of a sense what is around me. And the more you dance, you develop that sense of what's around you, where chairs are, where people are, where they are moving in space. But it's a two-way job. The follower as well has to look out, indicate by a tap on the back that somebody beside me. So there's a kind of a dialogue going on, and it's physical. And I know that I'm getting too close to somebody, and I can see it at the same time. But I found that getting the eye contact of the other lead from the dance floor is really important. If I've made eye contact with them while I'm dancing, somehow it works that we keep our own space and move together. It's important to see that we're not just dancing with our partner, but we're dancing with the other people as well on the dance floor, and of course the music.
What's the role of the music in all this?
That's the lead. That's the true lead. So there's the music that leads the lead, and the lead gives the music to the follower. So music, you synchronize, I connect. So music, you synchronize, that means my partner, which will be follower, she will synchronize, and I'll connect with her synchronized version of that music, and she will do the same for me. So the music, it's the lead, and we are both following it.
So once the dance has some experience, so that once the dancers can connect with each other, then they can work with each other to create a dance together. Now, a friendly conversation between strangers can be like steps, you know, very superficial, exchanging platitudes about the weather. We all know what's going to come next. You know, lovely weather we're having. Oh, yes, but it might be rain. Nonetheless, it can still be a positive thing to do, and particularly if you're learning a new language, as in you're a beginner, that's a good place to start. But even with a casual stranger, a conversation can sometimes be very deep and can go places you just didn't expect it to. Is there a tango parallel for these conversational patterns?
Well, with creativity, I think it's important to look at it as an improvisational dance. We're not dancing sequence of steps. Maybe in ballroom dancing they do that. But when it comes to creativity, tango really has it. It's got so much possibilities because it's improvised. Neither of us know, I'm talking about a leader to follow, knows what's going to happen next because it's going to be improvised. And from that improvised state, we just create. And to be in that state, you have to be in the now. You have to be in the moment. So that if you're thinking of, I'll just take an example, if you're not in the moment, you're thinking of something, you're going to, what you're going to do next, you're really trying to process and get in the way of the improvised state. Yeah, and our speed of thought is too slow if we're thinking what we're going to do next. So and we need to be able to be on the moment, in the moment, and using our automatic system to move our body at that point.
So the dancers need to be both spontaneous, and that comes to some extent from this being able to split their concentration into the bit that goes unconscious, which is the dance, and the concentration, the conscious concentration being on the partner.
Yeah, I think what it is witnessing what's going on. It's yoga in a sense that, you know, when you're witnessing in your breath, when you're really in the flow state, you're conscious. Doesn't mean you're not, you know, got asleep or anything. You're conscious, you know what's going on, but you're witnessing it, what's going on. And every now and again, you might make adjustments, but you're not interfering with the process of improvisation. Yes, it's spontaneous. And the idea is when it does flow and both dancers follow and lead, improvising, you inspire each other. So the creative expression that you bring to the dance through the music is you're being danced by, and the creative expression is coming out by the improvisation, that ability of your mind to be able to just interpret it in the moment and move automatically and witnessing that.
So the creativity of the partners on the fly is creating the conversation through the connection of their bodies. What if it goes wrong?
In a social sense, it's a wonderful thing to be able to just keep dancing and not being focused on the mistake or whatever went wrong, and just use your spontaneous creativity or improvise at that point to just put it into the dance. Okay, if it's something really, if someone loses their balance, even that can be a fun state. You can laugh about it. If it's performance, that's a different sort of thing altogether. But in a social situation, yeah, taking your judgment out of judging the other person, you know, whether they're a good dancer or they're a bad dancer, blah, blah, blah. When I first went to a Malonga, I danced with a lady who was a composer, and I'd only been dancing maybe a year, and I had no idea about the music. And she said to me, oh, you're not even dancing on the music. You're not dancing to the music. You don't know what you're doing. It really set me into a state of, what was it? It locked up my dance. Fear started to sort of pervade my movements, where I felt like I wanted to just get out of there. But I think the courage is to come back and, you know, go through those things, because they're just part of growing up in tango, being rejected when you ask someone to dance, or even cabaseo may reject you, and thinking, oh my good, no one want to dance with me. Not listening to all those kind of negative thoughts, and just being still open and dance, because we're going to be rejected. That's going to happen. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to say stupid things sometimes, but not being stuck with it. And gradually, you'll get better at doing whatever you're doing. Yeah, not being run by fears. One of the things that I've found really useful when something comes up and you're not, something that doesn't work emotionally for you, you've been sort of shunned or something like that, is to use your breath and synchronize with your breath. I would never dump anyone on the dance floor, to put it that way, but I have been dumped on the dance floor. But I try and work out what it is in myself that's uncomfortable because I'm projecting it onto the other person. They may feel perfectly all right, but it's usually in my own mind. So I use my breath. I just slow down my breath and breathe into that state of mind, and that gets me through to bring back all the other things that are useful. So the five C's of tango: connection, comfort, concentration, creativity, courage. I've got five fingers, and those five C's are, well, when I'm dancing, I'm lifting up my left hand and my partner, which will her right hand, will come together with my left hand, and she has five fingers, and we connect. It's a physical state that reminds me, like a memory hack. If you put that into a state where it's automatic and you're operating from those places, all those various ideas, the dance will work better, smoother. It'll be much more enjoyable and much more fun.
Peter Newell, thank you for joining us on the Tango Capital.
Thank you very much, Anne.